This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Humor writer Celia Rivenbark has a word of advice for you. No more than a word. In fact, she's written a whole book full of advice for you. Celia has authored several best-selling books that collected her popular columns in the News and Observer, and now she's out with a new book, this one filled with tips on etiquette. Celia Rivenbark's latest is called Rude Bitches Make Me Tired, Slightly Profane and Entirely Logical Answers to Modern Etiquette Dilemmas. Celia's going to be at Quail Ridge Books and Music in Raleigh tonight. She is in our studio now. Celia Rivenbark, welcome back. Great to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back.
We have also, we're going to put it out to our listeners. If they have etiquette questions, they can email us or tweet us. If you have SOTWNC.org with your etiquette questions, tweet at state_of_thing. So what made you decide to delve into etiquette?
Well, you know, I've been casting about with my editor for a single subject book, and she suggested one day, she said, how about etiquette? And I thought, this is perfect, because my husband says, and it's true, my whole life is spent telling other people how to do their lives. And so I decided it couldn't be better. Perfect match.
Did you read advice columns growing up?
I did. Certainly Ann Landers, Dear Abby, Miss Manners, Judith Martin, she was great. Currently Ask Amy is my favorite.
I mean, they say good manners never go out of style, but they have, haven't they?
They have. And they really have. And so much of it has to do with the technology today, because we are texting at the table and we're doing things like that that we have no business doing.
Yeah. Well, that's in here. Let me why don't we get right into it? The internet question. Lots of them texting at the table. Teens, of course, surly teens, big problem for a lot of parents. This one, I'll read it right from the book. You mentioned texting at dinner, huge problem. My teen insists on keeping her phone in her lap while we eat because she says I could miss an important text despite my pleas. She always seems to sneak it into the kitchen. How can I convince her that it is incredibly rude to text at the table?
Oh, she knows it's rude. She just doesn't care. We've had the same problem with the princess, my daughter, who's now 16, and she behaves as though every text is to confirm that a liver has just been made available, and she's waiting for that text from the transplant team. But, you know, usually the text is about who's where and what to what event. So it's kind of maddening when she does that. So, and I said in the book, I said, you have to be firm about this because studies have shown that families who eat dinner together at least four times a week really get on one another's nerves by that fourth night. No, what I meant to say was they've shown the kids are healthier, they're happier, they make better grades than those who don't eat with their families at night. Well, you cannot concentrate on your family conversation while you're texting.
There you go. And so, but that's, I mean, so you put your finger on it. It's the technology may have changed, but the problem is the same. How do we get people to kind of pay attention? And when should we be paying attention and when should we? Where did you get some of the ideas for these questions?
Well, when I first thought about doing the book, I kind of put the word out with my mom friends. I'm lucky enough to have quite a few. And I asked, what irritates you the most? And then it kind of broadened from there, my husband's work friends. And then it kind of broadened from there. And I may have even put something on Facebook at one point, you know, just asking, what is your pet peeve when it comes to etiquette? What really bugs you? What is the rudest behavior you've ever seen in your life? And share it with me. And I actually even stopped people at Harris Teeter and asked them.
And they said, that's rude.
Yeah,
walk up
rude.
To a perfect stranger and ask him a question.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of the problem is that etiquette is based on cultural norm, right? But we live in such a fragmented place these days.
We do.
So, but luckily you have Southern culture to draw on.
Oh, thank God. Thank the sweet Lord above. Mm-hmm. I was raised in the South. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, one of the chapters that I had the most fun writing is it's very near the front, and it's a chapter on funeral etiquette. And I like to say that as Southerners, we give great funeral. We really know what we're doing. And so one thing I said was at the very beginning, this is maybe people in other parts of the country do this, but I'm not sure they're quite as obsessed as we are. But it's very important. It's very good manners to not give a store-bought cake to someone when you know, to the grieving family. And one thing I said was, it doesn't matter that if you know an amazing bakery, really the best, or that everybody does it, so what's the big deal? Y'all are going straight to hell thinking like that. This is a funeral, not some godless Unitarian Universalist potluck.
Well, so, but now, in some ways, though, aren't you a victim of your own, not success necessarily, but one of the great conveniences is that there is a Southern culture and a great kind of love for etiquette. On the other hand, You title your book Rude Bitches Make Me Tired, which is, Frank, you know.
I know. It's slightly rude, isn't it?
Have you been confronted about this?
Not until now. No. Yes, I have, actually. Some sweet little ladies at church, they said, Celia, we want to buy your new book, but why does it have to have profanity in the title? And I patted their sweet little hands and I said, what was the truth? Well, you know, dirty words sell books. So basically, you know, I'm just going all out, you know, on this one.
Did they bless your heart?
They may have blessed my heart in passing. You know, years ago, Frank, my very first book, Bless Your Heart, Tramp. You don't think of tramp as being a naughty word really anymore. But I went to a Bible bookstore in Wilmington, and they were selling it under the counter with plain brown wrapper. So I can imagine that same Bible bookstore is not stocking this one at all.
Well, the other thing is, when you talk about customs that go way, way back, I mean, the idea of a baby shower is, again, filled with custom, filled with etiquette. It's something that women probably have done one way or another for a long time. So here's the question. Mm-hmm. My baby shower wasn't much fun because everyone insisted on giving me their own horror stories, long labors, missed opportunities for epidurals, C-sections and the like. Why can't people understand that I don't want to hear all of the negative stuff? I'm nervous enough as it is.
I know, but we can't really help ourselves. I tend to keep these sorts of things, try to keep it real. Don't you think that cave women did the same thing, really? One sympathetically patting the other's hairy hand and grunting about her 56-hour labor with only a cool leaf to chew upon. Childbirth is exceedingly personal, but it bonds us like nothing else in the whole world. So if you have a friend who insists on concentrating on the icky stuff, you're welcome to say you're tired and ask her to say, I need to take a nap. But let these women into your life, because there's a very good chance that along with those horror stories, they're carrying a casserole and a nice salad for that night.
Celia Rivenpark's latest book, lots of advice. It's called Rude Bitches Make Me Tired. She's going to be at Quail Ridge Books and Music tonight, but we will have her on this program more just ahead on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, today talking with Celia Rivenpark about her new book, Rude Bitches Make Me Tired, Slightly Profane and Entirely Logical Answers to Modern Etiquette Dilemmas. Celia's going to be at Quail Ridge Books and Music tonight, but here with me now. You know, we're in the middle of a fund drive. We're doing the important work of making sure that we're well-financed and prepared to go into the future. Is it polite to ask your friends for money?
I think it is under those circumstances. I'm a big supporter of public radio, yes. I hit up everybody I know. I try to get them on board as soon as I can. Absolutely.
Bless you. Well, and particularly, I think when you know that everybody is on board and that this is their opportunity. Well, that's kind of true. Now, we'll get serious for a minute, but in a sense, giving people the opportunity to help is not the same as imposing on them,
is it? That's exactly right. Well said. And, you know, it's probably not very mannerly, but I have guilted friends before a little bit. I say, oh, I see you enjoy, you know, listening to whatever that program is. Have you pledged yet? You know, okay. And then the onus is on them. They better do something. They better do it quick.
We encourage this kind of rudeness. Well, speaking of the workplace, you have in your book questions, many, many questions about the workplace. So let me ask you this one here. A coworker routinely places his lunch leftovers in the office fridge and leaves them there for days, even weeks. It's not my job to clean up after this slob, but if I don't do it, the break room simply reeks. What should I do?
I'm assuming that, like Randy Quaid's daughter in National Lampoon's Vacation, you were sadly born without a tongue. I assume this because I can't imagine a grown-up type person not simply calling out this bore. Most of the time, in my experience, the offender has simply forgotten about the leftovers. You shouldn't clean up behind him. You should stand there, arms folded, tapping your foot and pursing your lips while you watch him toss the smelly reekage from the fridge. It can become your Friday routine, along with weekend nails and waiting for your married boyfriend to call.
Oh, dear.
I know. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Happens now and then. Well, so what's your biggest etiquette pet peeve?
My biggest etiquette pet peeve. There are so many to choose from. I will give you one that is fairly recent, and it's pretty bad. It's pretty horrible. I don't know if you know about this, Frank, but there is a dreadful trend now to send out, when you're getting married, to send out, please don't save the date notices.
Yes. Don't save the date.
Don't save the date. Can you imagine anything more rude than that?
Where would that be for?
Well, here's the problem, and this is getting back to the technology problem with etiquette. Facebook, everybody goes on Facebook, and they'll put, you know, oh, the picture of the finger with the huge diamond on it, and so excited, you know, and all that, and that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Then they comment a few more times, picking out the, you know, getting the caterer, !, you know, 8 times, that kind of thing. And then every detail of the wedding progresses along on Facebook. Well, what happens is, if you've got, let's say, 1,200 Facebook friends, my niece who just finished college, I think she had like 3,000, you know, if you put these details on, they are under the sad and mistaken impression that they're invited to the wedding. So they will start commenting either through tweeting or Facebook responses. They'll say things like, can't wait, you know, or saving the third Saturday in October. So you have to cobble together a make good awfulness that becomes the please don't save the date card and send it out saying, no, you didn't make the cut.
Wow. Are people really doing this?
They're really doing this.
This is part of it again, getting back to the sort of where there is agreement on a norm and everybody does. Then we all know it's either etiquette to use that fork or not. And is it best? What about the pinky and picking your nose? Am I restricted to the pinky? Because I got work to do. I'm sorry. Forgive me for that. But these are norms. But what happens when we're living in this world where everybody's got their own norms, and so they're all irritated by what somebody else is perfectly normal. That's part of our problem, isn't it?
Exactly right. For example, I know the other day I have a huge problem. Doesn't seem to bother anybody else. My huge problem is I'm standing, let's say, at McDonald's, and the line, you know, everybody keeps this ridiculous respectful distance behind the person at the counter. What is up with that?
What is up with that?
We're out in the parking lot queued up because they will not move. It's not an ATM, okay?
Right.
Just he's ordering some hash browns, you know, and a dollar Coke, okay? Yeah. So it's not, you know, nuclear missile secrets. It's just move up, everyone.
Right.
Drives me crazy.
Me too. And it really is a generational thing. I've already figured that out.
Do you think?
It's like, yeah, because me as an adult who's lived in a world not screened by glass, my world actually included the human beings who smelled either good or bad because of those hash browns. And they were in front of me. And I dealt with that. But now you've got people whose whole universe is mediated by glass. So when the real human being shows up,
right.
I need 15 feet in front of them because I don't know what they're going to do.
You're right. That's exactly it. It is generational. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think you're right about that.
No, and so what I do is equally rude. I say, are you in line? You know why? Because
I do that.
You appear to be on Mars.
I didn't add the last part, but I'm thinking it seriously. But I do confess in the book to being in a line situation. I forget where, it may have been the post office, but I actually did do this, and I'm ashamed to this day, but it was highly effective. I don't recommend it, but there was a lot of lollygagging behavior at the post office, I'm sure now. And I finally just said, move. I mean, it's a terrible thing to say. Incredibly rude and not Southern at all. But I just couldn't take it any longer.
So that's a time when you know you can feel it welling up. You're about to do something you're going to regret.
Yes.
You do the thing and you regret.
Yes.
Have you been caught in a situation where you did something that was completely normal and somebody else just thought it was the height of rudeness and you were a little taken aback, a little surprised?
Just about a couple of weeks ago, it's funny you would ask that, I was in the grocery store and I had my little buggy, as we say in the South. I don't know if anybody else calls it a buggy, but it's a buggy. It's a grocery cart elsewhere. Anyway, I was heading for the freshly opened checkout line, and this dude, this guy, he just cut me off with his, like a freeway maneuver almost. Like he came in from the on-ramp, you know, and just cut me off. And I said, you know, he was a little bit younger than me, so I think I actually said young man, you know, which is so pathetic and sad. Young man, that was very rude. And he looked at me, a man of about 30, I guess. He looked at me and he said, I think it's rude of you to correct me. I had nothing. I was taken aback.
Right. What do you do? What do you do? See, that's it. We're all running around with our own norms now.
Yeah, you're
that's
right.
The good thing about etiquette. I used to think growing up it's a fancy thing, but no, it's a good thing.
Yeah, at the heart of it, it always comes down to just treating people like you want to be treated. Just it's very golden rule stuff.
So back to the workplace now. Another question from the book. This is again in the workplace. You know the expression prairie dogging? I hate it when people pop their heads up over my cubicle instead of just walking around. It's so, I don't know, invasive.
Oh, it is, isn't it? You know that expression, grow a pair? I mean, what do you do in your cubicle that's so private anyway? Oh, right, porn. Yeah, okay, that's it. Cubicles are an unfortunate reality of corporate office design. And like I say, short of going old Spice guy and hoisting a duffel bag over your shoulders and wandering into the mist to look for work on the docks, you're out of luck.
There we go. Celia Rivenbark from her latest book, Rude Bitches Make Me Tired, going to be at Quail Ridge Books tonight. In putting this book together, did you make these up out of whole cloth? Were you pulling them out of, or did you take any from advice columns? Any questions?
I did not take any strictly from advice columns. I mean, a lot of them are questions that I did just gather from friends and relatives and just from all kinds of folks, really. And then there are a few that I snuck in there that I just had always wanted to talk about, But
what are some of those?
I would say probably, again, going back to my favorite thing is probably the funeral etiquette, because one thing that I like to talk about is what you should – how you should behave. And sometimes when someone passes and we weren't necessarily terribly close to them, we forget, especially an elderly person, what an important person they were in our lives. We forget that because we've gone on with our busy selves. And so in the book, I talk about, I know you get terribly busy, and it probably explains why you never visited poor Dowdy and now quite dead Aunt Fern while she was alive. Yes, you were so, so busy. There just wasn't time. Yes, she could be a handful. Everybody knew that. She was dotty as hell. And toward the last, spent 12 hours a day watching Law and Order reruns. When you did visit, she spent the first 30 minutes accusing you of things and the second 30 minutes proving why she was right. But she's dead now. And please quit whining about how Fern was so inconsiderate as to die on the weekend when your teenage son's traveling soccer team was in the playoffs. And just who did she think she was anyway?
Celia Rivenbark putting the fun in funeral for us here with her latest book. That's the thing. The thing I think we don't – when people talk about being shy and really not wanting to go to funerals or being around that, I'm always puzzled by it because – that's the one place where you really can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Just your being there. And whatever you say sincerely is going to be taken by the bereaved as your attention. And that's really all folks are looking for in that moment. You can't mess it up.
That's exactly right. I do talk a little bit about, there's a chapter in here about the art of the visit. Mm-hmm. And in that, I mentioned, if you go to a visitation before the actual funeral, there's not a Chinese buffet in the corner. Get in, get out, say your condolences, don't linger. There's always the people that just will not leave. Get out. Say what you have to say. Say he'll be missed. Say she was loved and get out,
See, if all etiquette books had been written by this, like this, we would have been far more amenable, far more open to the notion of etiquette.
Thank you, Frank. This is not a book for the pinky with the up the nose or with the teacup. Yeah. This is much more practical, much more common sense advice.
It really is, and you have told your husband that if everyone would just do what you told them to do, the world would be a better place. How's it working out so far?
It's working out great. The book goes on sale today, so I'm assuming that this time, say next week, there'll be a much more better-mannered public, so to speak.
Is this a different kind of writing than your essays?
It is. I was a little. I know this is probably funny coming from me, but it's a little wilder, a little friskier. You wouldn't think that etiquette would be that way, but I had so much fun going on these rants. Right. As just being able to just devote a whole nearly 300 pages to what bugs me and what I think bugs a lot of people. I mean, one of the popular ones essays, at least for my friends who've read the book a little early, was airplane etiquette, because there are just so many grievous violations.
Yeah. But see, all these etiquette, if you think about them, some of the funniest ones and the most common are airplane etiquette, office etiquette, cubicles. It's when human beings are put in these kind of compressed spaces.
That's that, right. That's
and,
exactly
and have to
right.
work.
That's right.
Lines are not. Lines are different. You're going to be out of that. But when you're really having to spend any length of time in an inhuman kind mm-hmm. of situation, that's when we tend to be a little bit not ourselves.
You're right. I mean, I certainly feel it every time I get on a plane, if it's going to be a flight of any kind of duration at all. And what I call him entitled recline monster, pushes his seat back. He doesn't have to do that.
Right.
You know, he really doesn't. And then, you know, it's very.
Do you retaliate? Come on, you put your knee up there. You kind of give him a wild ride.
I kick the back of his seat for the duration of the flight. Yes.
Gives you something to do, doesn't it? Takes off some of the edge.
Yeah, and then I do that thing where if I have to get to use that god-awful restroom on the airplane, I will grab, you know, to get up using his seat, the top of his seat.
Yeah.
And if there's some hair involved in that, you know, so be it.
If you happen to have a cup of coffee between your teeth just to make it easier, and if that slips, oh, well. Let's talk about the internet, because technology, of course, is the other thing that's changing so much of how we behave and so many of the rules of etiquette. So you've got a question here, many, about Facebook, but this one in particular, I'm not sure how I feel about Facebook's If I Die app. Seems like kind of a morbid, creepy thing to actually leave behind statuses for your friends to upload after you die.
Yeah, it kind of is. I do understand that question. It is a good manners to speak to people when you're technically dead? And the answer I came up with is yes and no. I think it's useful, and I've seen this, that you can actually leave behind some very sensible advice for the living. And I got to thinking, if I did this, my advice for the living would be, never buy cheap ice cream. Seriously, it's so worth it to spend the extra money. Trust me, I have no dog in this fight anymore. Why would I lie about it? Now, I'm written as though I've already passed on. The second thing I said was, read the classics. I did, and now I'm dead. On second thought, read whatever the hell you want. And watch more TV. They don't talk a lot about Nathaniel Hawthorne up here, but Duck Dynasty, all the time. Seriously, I couldn't believe it either. Third advice, don't smoke. Maybe a little weed now and again to take the edge off, but not cigarettes. The doctors told me that smoking was a, quote, major contributing factor in my, quote, stage 4 lung cancer, and, quote, now I'm dead. And I'm missing the Super Bowl because the rest of the cloud wanted to watch Downton Abbey. Wait a minute. Maybe this is hell.
Celia Rivenbark. Her latest book is Rude Bitches Make Me Tired, Slightly Profane and Entirely Logical Answers to Modern Etiquette Dilemmas. She's going to be at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh tonight at 7:30. For more information, go to our website, stateofthings.org. Celia, always a pleasure. How great to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. So fun to be here.
Coming up, a preview of a new exhibit at CAM Raleigh. Stay tuned.